Hey everyone, it's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. You are not going to believe who we have on our podcast today. I'm so excited because I feel like I'm talking to one of the biggest fans that I've ever seen. If you've ever watched America's Got Talent and you've seen Simon Cowell's Golden Buzzer, I guarantee you're going to know this guest of ours today. Today, we are welcoming Ketchi. And she is from Nigeria, and she was on America's Got Talent in 2019. She got the Golden Buzzer from Simon Cowell, which is huge, I should say that. And she is a singer. She's an author. We're going to learn so much about her. So first of all, Ketchi, thank you so much for being on our podcast. We graciously appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Angela. I'm happy to be here.
You're so welcome. So first of all, like I said, I saw you. I'm going to talk about that because that's the most popular thing that people know. I want to just educate everyone just a little bit about what happened. You are from Nigeria and you're an inspirational speaker as well, but you have a dramatic story. Ketchi is how you pronounce her name. She is from Nigeria. Can you share with us? I can talk about it, but I think it'd be great if you could share with us about the plane crash. I think that's going to bring everybody around to know exactly who you are. So would you mind talking about that?
Not a problem. No. So as Angela said, I'm from Nigeria. I'm currently 32 years old, and I grew up, I was born in Nigeria, and I lived there until I was 16 years old. 16 is when I was a senior in high school. And that is when my accident happened. This was December 10th, 2005. And I went to a boarding high school. So we would typically fly back and forth from campus to our homes and, you know, back to campus when the semester starts. So that's what this day was. This was December 10th. So we were finishing the fall semester and we were heading home for the Christmas holidays. So it was myself and 60 other students from my high school, along with other passengers. It was a regular commercial flight. We're going home, and there were 109 people on board, including the flight crew. So there were 61 of us from my school and other passengers, plus the flight crew. The plane took off. Everything was fine. This is a routine flight that we always take at the end of every school semester and at the beginning. So it was not unusual for us to be on a plane that day. It's just a regular day when people fly like anywhere else in the world. So everything was fine for the most part of the flight. I remember it being very uneventful, and I slept for a bit, woke up. The flight is typically about an hour and a half. About 20 minutes towards the ending of the flight, the pilot made the announcement that we would be landing soon in the airport, right? So he starts the descent, and that's when the turbulence starts. And at first, it's just turbulence, you know, it's a part of flying. It's not a big deal. You don't think too much about it. But then it started to get very persistent and very just more and more dramatic, more exaggerated. And I think at that point, there was this tension like in the cabin, like what is something going on? But, you know, no one wants to be the one to say anything because you don't want to jinx it. And you don't want to think that, you know, the worst is actually potentially happening because
of course,
thousands of feet in the air. And like, it's just like the worst time to have any kind of malfunctioning issue with a plane. So we're just there sitting there. And then this lady at the back of the plane just kind of screams, you know, and I think her scream just kind of incited the chaos. You know, there was no running around or anything. We're all strapped in, but everyone started screaming with her. People were praying at the top of their lungs, screaming Jesus, you know, just screaming, oh my God. And I remember just sitting there in my seat. I was in an aisle seat close to the front of the plane. And next to me, in the aisle seat next to mine, was one of my closest friends. And I remember just sitting there like shell-shocked and confused because no one boards a plane preparing for this kind of thing. You know, you don't board thinking the worst is going to happen. You just board and think, hopefully it ends soon, I'm out of here. So I just could not understand that this was potentially a plane that was having issues and might be crashing. It was just a weird concept to even consider, because why would that happen on the plane that I'm on? Like, this is something that happens in movies, you know? But then I remember the last thing that I remember ever like seeing was just holding my friend's hand from across the aisle and hearing this like metal scraping sound like inside my brain. And then it was just darkness. And then before I knew it, I was opening my eyes and 5 weeks had passed. And I was opening my eyes in the hospital all the way in South Africa.
Wow.
And I was waking up from a coma. So basically, after I woke up, I was told, you know, the extent of my injuries and what happened. Well, they told me what how many people passed eventually when, you know, I was well enough to know. But yeah, that's how I realized, you know, I was in a plane crash and, you know, I got third degree burns over 65% of my body.
Wow. And you look beautiful. You do. You really do. Oh, I have so many questions about that, but how did you get through that? I mean, because this podcast is all about, you know, focusing and how do you focus when you've been through something like that and you move on? Did it take a lot of therapy or how did you get through that?
Honestly, it's a combination of many different things that helped me kind of refocus, I suppose, my life and help me adapt to this new body, this new reality, but not letting it like hinder me from actually living. I think it was a combination of a bunch of things. First is my faith. I'm a Christian. I was born into a Christian household and that didn't really mean much to me until I was a little older. And then the accident happened and it meant even more. And then that combined with the love and the support from my family, specifically my mother, who literally dropped everything to be there with me in South Africa and has not left my side since. I think her sacrifice and like the time that she spent with me and the amount of attention she gave me during that most difficult time in my life, I think was necessary and the big reason why I was able to not just survive what happened, but actually continue to live life as fully as possible. You know, she gave me all that attention and she was in the beginning for a large amount of time, she was my reason for even doing anything, for even surviving, for living, for choosing to see each day, waking up and facing the pains of every day. She was the reason why I would do that because I wanted to see her face. So my mom was a very big role just by herself.
I love my mom too. So that means so much to me. Yeah, definitely. So yeah,
and there was my family, my dad, obviously my sister, my little sister, who was like 5 at the time, but somehow had the maturity to understand the situation. And those two things combined with this just inner will to see this through and not just for my sake, but for those that passed away, I think all those things combined to give me what I needed to understand that this did not have to be the end. It would be the end in some ways to the life I knew, but it's not the end of life in general. You know, there were still things to look forward to just simply by the fact that I was alive. Yeah, I think those are the things that helped me refocus.
Wow. It's really incredible. All right. So moving forward then, did you know before then that you wanted to be a singer?
No, that was not ever on my radar. I loved singing before the accident, but it was purely for fun and like a hobby. As a child, I was like in the child, like church choir kind of thing. But yeah, as I grew older as a teenager, my voice got better, but it was never anything like past the usual, like, you know, I'm sure every kid does this where they imagine themselves like on stage performing like Beyonce or J-Lo or something.
Yeah.
And you're in the mirror, you know, singing to your like stuffed animals or whatever. Like, it was never anything beyond that. And I would sing for fun and I would sing in school as well in high school. But again, it was never something that I considered would, it just seems like such a far away world for me to even consider like singing to a group of strangers who would actually care to hear me sing. But I will say that after the accident happened, my voice did kind of go through a change that made it definitely better. Can't explain what happened. No one can really explain medically how or why that happened, but something shifted for sure in my singing voice. And my mom noticed, anyone that heard me singing noticed. And that definitely gave me more confidence to like, you know, sing and enjoy myself. And music was a very big part of my healing process as well. You know, it was able to kind of reach parts of me that, you know, surgery could not, you know, it healed me in many ways. So there was also that component of music, you know, in my life. But beyond those factors, maybe one day singing in like a worship team, that was really the extent of my imagination for music. So everything that came with America's Got Talent was literally just God showing me that he had more in store for me in that regard. But I didn't personally think I would do something like that until it happened.
It's so awesome. And what an inspiration, really, just that alone. So, okay. So then you decide to audition for America's Got Talent. So first of all, where did that come from?
Yeah. I was in the middle of my MBA at that time. This was 2016. So I was in America's Got Talent twice. I was there in 2017 and 2019. So the very first one, 2017, happened because one of my best friends signed me up without telling me. That's how that happened. I did not sign myself up for the show. I never would have because, again, yes, I love singing. And yes, my voice was a little better now and all that. But there are millions of people who can sing and who love to sing and sound better than me. And I just felt like my voice was not just like something like, yeah, I like singing, but does that mean you go on a TV show? Like, I don't know. Would you put your, like, what makes you think your voice is special enough to be like considered with a bunch of other people who can sing and are not burned, you know, and don't have obvious scars and stuff? Because I felt like that's also a factor when it comes to entertainment. People like to see people that look good and have a certain like physical image, you know, that industry specifically. And now I was so not like, you know, matching that aesthetic anymore. So even if my voice was great, what are the chances I would actually be put on TV? So that was like my thought process whenever my friend, because she would bring up like a bunch of the, she brought up The Voice, American Idol.
I was going to say with The Voice, you would definitely have been chosen because, but I commend you for being brave enough to try. I act as well. And look, it's a tough road, but if you love it and it's your passion, you do it. What made you choose over that one? Over your friend, I guess, decided, right, to go that way?
Yeah. She basically just was sick of me just ignoring all her. When she sends them to me an email, I would just be like,
what a great friend. What a great friend.
She was really tired of it. She was like, she doesn't understand how I would be able to do this with my voice and not put myself out there. So fine. She would just put me out there herself. And it just happened to be that at that time, America's Got Talent had just started their online auditions because I missed the in-person one when they go around doing casting. So she sent me the online form where like, it's like, you know, it's not too late. They have the online one. You can still apply. And that's, so they were the ones who were doing that at that time. This was around September 2016-ish. And I, again, you know, it was like, cool, you know, I had things to do. I was working, I was in school. So she just kind of filled out the form for me and did everything like it was me, even wrote a little description thing like, hi, my name is Kachi, I'm 27, I like this, I do that, I love to sing, I was in a plane crash, but I'm...
You got a great friend, man. You have a great friend, because that, I mean, bless her. I mean, because everyone should have a friend like that.
I agree. She changed my life. She allowed herself to just kind of be this instrument of change in my life and brought this whole new like factor into my life that I never would have considered. So yeah, I love her for that.
That's awesome. Your first release came out in 2018. You want to tell us what the name of that one was?
Yes, that was, it's called Don't You Dare. That was actually a song that was given to me by two songwriters who watched me on America's Got Talent and were inspired by my story to write that song for me. And so when they reached out to me, I saw the lyrics. I was like, I can't believe that I'm not the one that wrote this, because it was like they pulled words out of my head to write something like this. And I just fell in love with it. And I was so grateful to them for even being so moved by my story that they would do something like this for me. And so they gave it to me, the licensing and everything, and told me if I wanted, it's mine. And so I eagerly recorded it. And that became my first single.
Awesome. And then More Than My Scars, it was released. That's a book that is out right now. And then what is your new single called, or your new album?
So my new album is self-titled. It's called Catchy. It's a full-length album of all original songs. And interesting tidbit is that 4 of the songs are actually duets with fellow America's Got Talent finalists that I made friends with and just kind of stayed in touch with over time, who have incredible voices and very different sounds. One's an opera singer, one is like country, one is like more my style of music, I would say, that I lean towards. And I just had the honor of working with these people, and I wanted to. So
look at what a great experience, just being on that show, that you got to network and develop relationships with other people. And then are able to do that. That is so moving to me. I love that. I love that. Who inspires you?
That's always a hard question, because I don't really typically have like any big name people that...
It can be anybody. It can be your family.
My mom inspires me a lot. And my aunt, who is my mom's younger sister. These are people who are large influences in my life in different ways too. My mom is specifically regarding like faith and just her walk with God. And I just really admire it a lot. I feel like that's the ideal to strive towards, even though she tells me she's like nothing, you know, but like to me, I feel like she's so like a role model kind of in the way that she presents faith and the gentle presents it, you know.
I have the same mother. It's really, if you have a great mother, embrace them.
Definitely.
And your aunt, and you started to speak about your aunt?
Is just so, she's like a go-getter, you know. She is, again, like a very creative type businesswoman, and she has her own business and everything, and she's successful. And she is just the prime example of what it means to kind of take the things that you're interested in, your passion, and turn it into something that can make you money. And I feel like that is what I struggle to do even now with all the things that because I have so many different passions. But she's someone who gives me confidence that it's possible, you know, just the way that she lives her life. And that's why I admire her so much. So in terms of like, you know, I find a lot of similarities with the way that she is, the way that I am. So because of that, I tend to kind of look to her for like, I guess, advice in terms of career and like, you know, just trajectory when it comes to doing things that you love. I feel like she always just has something brilliant to say and some kind of wisdom to impart. So I really admire her for that. So in my real life, like those are two people that genuinely like encourage me and genuinely like motivate me to just be the better version of myself every day, essentially. So yeah.
You know what? And they're living and you're living. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes in life, people can go through things and they get stuck, right? I think you would be the same if you're in that place, really get the help you need to get out and live, because this is life, right? And you could have passed away in that plane crash. And look, you didn't, and you are living. And that is, I'm so inspired by you. That is so awesome. By the way, her name is spelled K-E-C-H-I and it's Ketchy. So when you see her, it's Ketchy. I'm an actress as well. So stage fright, you get on stage and sometimes you freeze or you forget the words. Has that happened to you? And how do you focus when you've made a mistake? And that could have been on any other stage that you've been on. How do you pull it together?
When it comes to stage fright, honestly, I have only one. I would say I have one experience. Well, actually a couple. Okay. So it can present itself in many ways. For me as a singer, it's a situation where I may forget the words to a song. And so what I tend to do, because the music, the song, it goes on. So I just end up like vamping until I reach where I remember, you know, so it's really an on the spot kind of decision. If you forget the lyrics or you missed words, you can't like let that stop you from continuing. So in my mind, immediately I'm thinking, okay, so we just have to recover, you know, just recover to the part that you know, and then eventually it kind of comes back. So if you in that moment don't freeze and like the you allow yourself to kind of just realize, okay, it's done. The mistake is made. So how do we just recover from this? So in my head, rather than allowing the panic to kind of like stretch out and make me forget literally the rest of the song, because that can happen, I just go into like a fail-safe mode, like, you know, recovery mode, you know? Okay, so I forgot that part. Okay, so we just move on. It happens to everyone. And then I get to a point where I remember, or maybe if I'm singing with someone else, then they kind of like, you know, help me and like, continue the song, and then I can kind of join them and continue as well. So I would say that happens often, not often, but it happens because I am in my worship team in church, and that's where that kind of thing happens mostly. So I feel like because I'm never alone on that stage, I never really feel completely panicked because I know that there's someone there who can kind of recover for me. And
right.
So usually that's how that goes. Now, if I am speaking and maybe I forget what I want to say, I end up just kind of making up stuff until I usually end up remembering what I'm trying to say. So I just kind of segue you back into it. But when it comes to inspirational speaking, it's really hard to kind of go completely off track. I would say if you had a script that you memorized and you forget the exact like, you know, chronology of your script, you can always kind of like just vamp a little bit and say what it is that, you know, things that still have to do with the theme of what you're talking about, but may not be necessarily what you wanted to say in that moment. But then eventually, as you keep talking, because you're still making sense, you do remember what you were trying to say. And then you can kind of like recover back into that script that you had in your head. So that's what happens for me. If the few times I've forgotten like what I was trying to say, like in a script or whatever, that's usually what I do. I just kind of like say some stuff, give examples about maybe my life, I use examples about what I've been talking about, like maybe try to help them, you know, relate more to what I'm saying while I'm still trying to remember what it is that, you know, I want to say in that script I have in my head. So that happens sometimes too. But I will say the most prominent thing that happened was on America's Got Talent, my very first audition. I did not forget the lyrics or anything, but I was so nervous that I was singing way faster than the track that was playing. And so as I was doing that, this is the very first one when I was on there in 2017, Simon stopped me from singing, stopped the track. And, you know, he was like, are you nervous? I was like, yes, a little bit. And so he asked someone to get me
water. That's the worst, man. I hurt for you people. When it happens, I'm just like, you know.
It was the best thing he could have done for me because it was like, the way it was going, it was not going to be good. I was not going to present the best possible performance that I could give my, like to give myself the best chance, you know? So him stopping me and asking me to like get in water for me, that really like helped me just kind of take a deep breath and relax. And he was like, just relax. And this time, you know, just sing the song, no music, just sing a cappella. That freed me so much. And I feel like he did that to give me a fighting chance, you know, so that we can see, so the audience, everyone can see what I really can do in this moment. So after I calmed down, took my water, took a deep breath, I sang, and that's the audition that they showed on TV. And it ended up being what got me on the show. So I have to thank him for realizing that I wasn't given my best performance, you know, and allowing me the chance, like a second chance, essentially, to present that. So I think that was the most nervous I've ever been ever on any stage. Because when he stopped me, my whole chest was just like, oh, my God. Well.
Oh, I feel for you. I'm screaming going, don't do this to her. Don't do this to her. So, I've got several questions for you. So first of all, we all want to know, right? What's Simon Cowell like? What is he really like? Is he a jerk? Is he nice? What's he like? And be honest, because us at home, when we're watching it, I think, this is my perspective, I think he's gotten softer over the years than he used to be.
That's actually interesting, because a lot of people say the exact same thing, that they think he's gotten softer, and they think it's because he got a son. When he had a son, then it just made him naturally softer. That is definitely possible. I will say that my experience personally with Simon was wonderful. He was extremely nice to me, very encouraging. I never got to see his quote unquote mean side, or just his very, I would say, blunt side.
Abrupt.
So blunt. Yeah. He doesn't sugarcoat. But a lot of times, because of that, the way that he is, because we know he's that blunt kind of person, when he says something positive, it means that much more, because you feel like he's not someone who will sugarcoat words for anyone, no matter what age they are. And I saw that a lot.
Tell it like it is. He's going to give you.
I was just really grateful that I was never like on the receiving end of that extreme bluntness, you know, when it comes to like just saying anything that would be, I guess, make you feel like, you know, you don't really belong here, or maybe you need to go and try again. Yeah. You know, there were a lot of situations like that for sure that I witnessed. But personally, I got to see his nice side, and I feel
that's awesome. That's so awesome.
Wanted to just make sure I felt that I belonged there, you know. And I think he did that for anyone he felt, you know, had earned their spot there, essentially. So I would say he felt that way about me, and it affected how he treated me. So I'm very grateful for that. And he actually wrote the foreword for my book. So
wonderful. Well, I got to tell you, this just shows you how long I've watched the show. I remember the bluntness, and I can tell you two things about him. Just from a viewing perspective, he's had a son, and that's impacted him, and he's animals.
Oh, yeah.
He has a heart for animals. So, yeah. So, and then I'm going to ask you this. You get the golden buzzer. So what went through your head? What was that like?
This was the 2019 appearance that I had on the show. Yeah, when I was on the show as a contestant. And I remember just kind of finishing the song and thinking, that sucked.
Oh, no.
It's never good enough. You know, I feel like singers, people, anyone in anything creative is always the harshest when it comes to their own work. And I feel like it's definitely true for singers, like specifically, because I just am never satisfied. I'm never happy. I just always feel like it could have been better. This was okay. You know, I just definitely my worst critic. And I feel like that moment was, it hit really hard that day. I was like, this this was just okay. Like, I just don't feel like. And so when Simon started talking, he went, you know, I didn't really like it that much, you know. And I remember thinking, well, that just confirms what I already thought. I knew it sucked. And so I'm not surprised he'd say that. But, you know, oh, well, you know, this was a second chance on the show anyway. I'm grateful to be here. Regardless. I had my thank you for having me speech already prepared because I was sure that was the end for me. So, and then he goes, I loved it. And then he stands up and he like hits the buzzer. And in my head, from my point of view, it's just all in like slow motion. Cause I'm like, what is he doing? Why is he standing up? Why is he moving towards the buzzer? Is he serious? What the hell is happening right now? And like, as the confetti is falling all around me, I'm still in a state of like I wasn't even given a chance to really realize what was going on before all the gold was flying everywhere. And it was like, is this for real? Is this like happening for me? Like, is this actually happening? And I think the shock of the whole thing just made me just break down in tears because I really thought I did a horrible job. But for me to see that someone actually felt the exact opposite enough to give me something like this, to give me this kind of gift. And for it to be Simon, who is someone that I've always felt from the first time I was on the show that really encouraged me and felt like I had something here, you know, I had a gift here. To get that from him felt like even more acknowledgement, you know, validation from someone who has proven over the years that he has a good ear for music. So I feel like everything was just so overwhelming in that moment. And I was just crying. And I imagine because my mom was in the audience and I just remembered that she's watching this. So she's probably crying her eyes out too. And that made me cry even.
I was crying. I'm crying for you. I was just so happy for you.
I felt so undeserving, but I was so grateful that someone felt like I deserved that moment. And it was just it's just a gift. It's what I remember it as. And I'll never forget how that felt. It felt so, so, so overwhelmingly beautiful. So I was very grateful.
As a viewer, I cried with you. I was so excited for you and I was clapping and cheering you on in my little living room. So you have one huge big fan that's talking to you right now and many, many others. I have two major questions for you. First of all, I know you faced this, so I'd love to know how you've done it. When you faced rejection, I'm sure. How do you handle in your heart? How do you handle rejection? Because sometimes rejection can just tear us apart.
I've handled rejection for sure, like anyone else. But I think the times when it affected me the most were the times when they made me doubt my value in what I had to bring to the table. You know, it made me doubt whether or not I was actually smart, you know, or whether or not I was someone who could potentially bring value to like a company. And this was during the time when I was applying for jobs right after undergrad. That period of time was extremely difficult for me because I could not seem to get anything to stick. And it got to the point where I would start to consider that maybe my appearance and my burns and my obvious scars were playing a role in not getting me these positions. Because when I looked on paper, like, my resume and my qualifications didn't seem any different from the people that were being hired. So I would always kind of like wonder what it was that would make them not choose me over someone else. And it would definitely make my mind wander into that territory as well, which is very dangerous territory. So I think that was the lowest and most difficult time in my life because I was for the first time ever doubting my worth as like just everything I learned as someone, like as someone that was educated, as someone that looked different and was trying to navigate this world looking different, but trying not to let that hinder her from doing what she wants to do. I was feeling like, on the contrary, the world was kind of hindering me from doing what I want to do, you know? So getting over that was actually very difficult, I would say. And I think what helped me was kind of focusing on the things that I do love and things that I know that I'm good at. So around that same time was the first time that I looked into joining my worship team. Cause I did that because number one, I wanted to do something that I knew that I was good at. And then another thing was I felt that being in that kind of environment would also help nourish me and make me feel better and just more at peace, which is what my faith does for me. So it was like killing two birds with one stone. So joining my worship team was a very big and important move for me because it rejuvenated me and gave me more like encouragement to kind of continue putting myself out there, no matter what it is that I felt like people were how, no matter how I felt people were responding to me, it made just doing that for me and having that experience with the worship team every Sunday, it really made me, it just refilled me and gave me more energy to continue what I needed to continue. And then eventually I got a job. It wasn't the greatest job, but it was a job and, you know, kind of dispelled all the things I was thinking about how, you know, they wouldn't hire me because of this or because of that. And then I went back to school anyway, you know, to continue my, to get my MBA after that, after a year of that. And then amazing things happened from there.
I just want to share something with you. I have a friend of mine who has a big scar down from a heart surgery. And when I see her, I always say, thank you, God, for letting her live and letting me know her. Anyone that knows you, it's a reminder that we're blessed to have you in this world. And so take that from me, because I look at her every time. And when I see it, I go, thank you, God, that we have her. So just that's from me to you. So I have one last question. We ask it to everybody, and it's the most popular question. Everybody has their off days. When you get in your car and you're going to that meeting or on the flight, whatever, but you're not there, it's just one of those days and you've got to have game on, because you've got to sing or you've got to do whatever. What is the artist or the genre or the song that you listen to that gives you game on?
For me, it is, I'm probably, I don't know if I want, I don't want to say forever, but I know for a long time it hasn't changed. So it's very possibly forever going to be this song by Elevation Worship called I Can't Believe. That's the song. I just absolutely love that song. I love the message. And it just reminds me that at the end of the day, that no matter what I'm feeling, how off I might be feeling, like the fact that I'm here today is a gift that a lot of people did not have. Like, people die every day and life itself is a gift, an ongoing gift, because we do so many things every day, put ourselves in situations every day that could easily be the end of everything for us in this world. But we're still here. And that has to mean something. It has to mean something that we are still here when so many others aren't. And I think that song reminds me of that and reminds me of the gift. It just pretty much humbles me and gives me perspective. And just reminds me that whatever it is I'm worried about facing that day, at least I'm here to face it. You know, so I think that's what that song does for me. It's called I Can't Believe by Elevation Worship. And it is one of my favorite songs in the world.
Love that. Ketchy, I am blessed to know you. And I know our audience is going to be so inspired by this. So thank you so much for being on our podcast. I graciously appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
You're welcome. You are the reason.
I didn't really like it that much. I actually loved it.